Coon Review, Print Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the National Podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @CoonReview, that is @CoeAndReview. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@coonreview.com. That is information@CoeAndReview.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
This is from The National on Friday, the 10th of November, 2023, from the Politics section. ALBA table Scottish Parliament motion calling for ceasefire in Gaza. This article is written by Steph Braun. The ALBA party will table a motion in the Scottish Parliament calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Middle East. It will be put forward by the party's only MSP, Ash Regan. It is set to read that the Parliament calls for an immediate ceasefire and an end to the killing of all innocents in the Middle East, believes that those from Hamas who have committed terrorist atrocities against Israelis should be prosecuted as criminals, but that such terror does not justify a disproportionate and illegal military response by the government of Israel. Parliament calls on the UK government to support an immediate ceasefire, justice for the Palestinian people, and the provisioning and safe evacuation of Israeli hostages and civilians from a war zone. Regan, who defected to the party earlier this month from the SNP, has insisted the international community must dedicate all possible influence to urge a ceasefire. She told the National, "The ALBA party believe that the perpetrators of terrorist atrocities against innocent civilians must be condemned without caveat and prosecuted as criminals, but that such terror cannot justify a disproportionate military response, which is resulting in the indiscriminate death of more innocent civilians. The ALBA party associate ourselves with the comments of anyone seeking an immediate ceasefire, justice for the Palestinian people, and the provisioning and safe evacuation of Israeli hostages and civilians from a war zone. The international community must now dedicate all possible influence to urge Israel and Palestine to choose the path of de-escalation and ceasefire. In the immediate term, we need to secure a ceasefire so that we can ensure that the killing stops, following which it is time for those in the world whom wield influence to bring to bear long-standing United Nations resolutions and to redirect resources dedicated to weapons of war to resourcing the fountains of a path to peace." The move comes after the Welsh Parliament voted to call for an immediate ceasefire on Wednesday evening. There have since been strong calls for Holyrood to follow suit. Last week, Jonathan Chaffee, a campaigner with Stop the War Coalition, said the move would show Scotland stands full square behind a ceasefire in Gaza. On Thursday, pro-Palestinian protesters climbed on top of the Scottish Parliament. They could be seen flying a flag and a banner saying, "Stop arming Israel." What gets debated in the chamber is dealt with by the Parliamentary Bureau, so MSPs will still need to vote on whether to select the motion for debate. That article was written by Steph Braun. This is from The National on Friday, the 10th of November, 2023, from the comments section. A second Trump presidency could be on the horizon. This article is written by David Pratt. If Donald Trump was US president again right now, how would he have handled the crisis in the Middle East? Come to think of it, how would Trump handle the ongoing war in Ukraine? Yes, that war is still in full vicious tilt as we rapidly approach the second anniversary of the Russian invasion. Though you could be forgiven for thinking otherwise, given the dearth of news coverage. Isn't it odd how the international news agenda these days appears increasingly unable to handle more than one big international story at a time? Committing its resources wholesale recently as it has to the latest Israel-Hamas conflict, it's all too easy to lose sight of other, really significant stories going on in the world. Trump and the possibility of him once again becoming president is one such story. But before we consider the bad news, let's take stock of the positives for the Democrats. No doubt Joe Biden will be a tad relieved that his Democratic Party has recently secured victories in a series of state and local elections. 12 months ahead of a presidential election, in which Biden is set to seek a second 4-year term, his party saw off Republican rivals, with a Democratic governor re-elected in Kentucky. In Ohio, meanwhile, voters there dealt a blow to the Republican governor by allowing Democrats to reclaim control of the state legislature. These wins, along with Democratic victories in local elections in Pennsylvania, would suggest so far so good for Biden. But take a closer look at the bigger polls, and things are not so rosy. With barely a year to go until the crunch date on November the 5th, 2024, a New York Times Siena College poll this week showed Biden losing to Trump in 5 of the 6 swing states that will almost certainly decide the result of the 2024 elections. Voters also said they trusted Trump to do a better job on handling the economy, 59% to 37% for Biden, on immigration, 53% to 41%, and even on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, 50% to 39%. Sure, polls are just a snapshot in time, and public opinion wavers, but let's just say Trump wins. What could the world expect from him as the next US leader? Well, you don't have to look far for an answer on the domestic front, given that most of it is laid out in Trump's campaign website in the shape of a plan that's been dubbed Agenda 47, a reference to Trump becoming America's 47th president if he wins. These range from the fantastical or egotistical, such as the building of freedom cities on empty federal land where Americans can live and work without burdensome regulations. It includes rounding up the homeless. Sound familiar? To get them off the streets and move them to tent camps outside US cities until their problems can be identified. In short, it's all very Trump. But what of the international agenda? I ask because governments around the world, faced with the serious prospect of his re-election, are already trying to anticipate the foreign policies of a second Trump administration. Well, the first thing the international community would have to realise, let alone contend with, is that it would be dealing with a man who tried to subvert his own country's democracy. That in itself would be a green light to despots and their ilk everywhere. For many, the US's role as a bastion and protector of democracy and human rights is already severely in question under Biden, as his administration's largely unquestioning support of Israel has shown over the continuing bombing of Gaza. But, like it or not, America still commands a central point in the eyes of many countries and their leaders when it comes to the trust on which many current alliances with the US are based. In a nutshell, the implications for Washington's allies would be immense. Take Ukraine, for example. Under Trump, it's pretty much a certainty that the US would reduce the scope or enforcement of sanctions against Russia. It's very much a given, too, that Trump as president would at the very least slow supplies of weapons, munitions, and other material to Kyiv government, all of which justified underputting America first. Should Trump choose such a strategy, then ironically it would be likely to have the opposite effect. For whether one likes the idea or loathes it, America's global clout has been greatly enhanced in the eyes of many by its support for Ukraine. Alongside such moves, Trump would almost certainly also step up his past intimidation and threats against Washington's international treaties, in other words, NATO, and bilateral treaties with South Korea and Japan. Prospective relations with China would also be up for grabs, though here they might not be all that dramatic, because US hostility to China is to be found within both Republican and Democrat ranks. Where Trump differs from Biden on this, of course, is that the former couldn't give a jot about ideology or political philosophy or containing China. Autocracies, democracies, they are all one to Trump, whose main beef with Beijing is economic. Business, money, and who is the biggest deal-maker would be the motivators here for Trump, though God only knows what the geopolitical implications of that might turn out to be in terms of China's response. Which brings me to the Middle East. Recently, of course, Trump lashed out against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, albeit driven by Netanyahu's apparent cosiness with Biden. In short, to quote one former Trump adviser, he's pissed off because Bibi praised Biden and the Biden White House for being supportive. But were Trump to be re-elected, few doubt that he would adopt the usual US default position within US-Israeli relations, even if that also meant putting bad blood between him and Netanyahu behind them, working, of course, on the assumption that Trump regains power and Netanyahu remains in office. And so there we have it, for despite a post-presidential impeachment trial, 4 ongoing criminal trials for 91 alleged felonies, and efforts by Republican challengers for the party's nominations in 2024, Trump remains the front runner. The inescapable fact, then, is that in all, a return of Trump to the White House, while not inevitable, is evidently and disturbingly plausible. Given the parlous state of the global political scene right now, that is quite a prospect. Even more worrying is that it's one that both America and the wider world seem to be sleepwalking into. That article was written by David Pratt. This is from The National, on Friday the 10th of November 2023, from the news section. George Osborne reveals bizarre Queen intervention in bagpipe cut plan. This article is written by James Walker. Queen Elizabeth stopped George Osborne from closing the British Army's bagpipe school. The former Tory Chancellor of the Exchequer was speaking on the Political Currency podcast, which he co-hosts with his former Labour counterpart, Ed Balls. Osborne claimed it was the only time the late Queen interfered in politics during his tenure. He said, "I was at a state dinner and she came up to me and she said, 'The Chief of the Defence Staff is unable to answer my question. He told me to go speak to the Defence Secretary. I went to see the Defence Secretary, and he told me to come and speak to you. So, I'm asking you, you're not going to close the Highland Bagpipe School?'" The Army School Bagpipe Music and Highland Drumming, founded in 1920, is a British Army training establishment located near Redford Barracks in Edinburgh that provides instruction on Scottish pipe band music to military pipers and drummers. Osborne then responded, "Of course not, Your Majesty." He then said he investigated and found out that cuts were indeed being made to the school and ordered them to be reversed. He went on, "I immediately sent a message back to the palace that she could be reassured that the pipers of the British Army would remain well trained." That article was written by James Walker. This is from The National, on Friday the 10th of November 2023, from the news section. Scottish cat reunited with owners after 5 years. This article is written by Steph Braun. A Scottish cat has been reunited with its owner after going missing 5 years ago, thanks to being microchipped. Smoke, a Bengal cat from Fife, went missing in 2018 when he was just two. Immediately after Smoke disappeared, the family put up posters around the local area and knocked on neighbours' doors to ask if they had seen Smoke, but he was never found. The family never gave up hope, though, and when they moved house last year, they updated their contact details with PetLog, the database Smoke was microchipped with. 5 years and 2 months on from when Smoke disappeared, Kev received a phone call from a vet's practice in a town 10 miles away to say he had been found. Kev said, "It took me by surprise because Charcoal, Smoke's littermate, was asleep upstairs, but when the vet said it was Smoke, who had been brought in for minor treatment, scanned and traced to us via the PetLog microchipping database, that was a shock to say the least. I didn't quite want to believe it until I had seen him." On arriving at the vet, Kev and Janet were told that the couple who had brought Smoke in had been looking after him and keeping him indoors for the last 5 years, around 3 miles from his home. Smoke is now settling back in his new home, but is very traumatised. Kev said, "It could be a long process, but I'm sure we'll get there. We only have had this second chance with Smoke because he was chipped and our contact details were kept up to date." Bill Lambert, spokesperson for PetLog, added, "We're so pleased that Smoke has been reunited with all his family because of his microchip, and their story is a great lesson for owners to keep their contact details up to date with their microchip database, no matter how much time has passed." That article was written by Steph Braun. This is from The National on Friday the 10th of November 2023, from the news section. Scottish Water strike to go ahead after talks break down. This article is written by Steph Braun. Scottish Water staff will take their first round of strike action on Friday after talks with bosses broke down. First Minister Humza Yousaf said at First Minister's Questions on Thursday he still hoped it could be averted at the 11th hour after lengthy talks took place earlier this week. But Unite has confirmed 500 of its members will press ahead with the first walkout. The first stoppage is scheduled to last for 4 days from Friday. A number of major pickets and demonstrations across Scotland will be held in towns and cities to coincide with the strike action. Unite has described the latest talks as a waste of time, as the trade union accused Scottish Water bosses of proposing a revised offer with more strings attached than a symphony orchestra. The dispute centres on Unite accusing Scottish Water bosses of bypassing long-standing collective bargaining processes involving unions. The union said this specifically relates to a new reward system which Scottish Water bosses are trying to impose on the workforce. The proposed system is being tied to the 2023 pay offer. Unite General Secretary Sharon Graham said, "Scottish Water has failed to address the concerns of our members. Instead, Scottish Water has continued to press ahead with its proposed new grading structure, which they are foolishly linking to the pay offer. Talks have been a waste of time. It appears to be the case that the bosses in the boardroom will only listen to us when our members have taken to the picket lines across Scotland. Unite will fully support our members in the fight for better jobs, pay and conditions at Scottish Water." The trade union's membership includes wastewater operatives, water treatment and burst repair operatives, maintenance engineers, electricians and sewage tanker drivers. It believes the industrial action will significantly impair Scottish Water's ability to respond to water leakages, flooding, pollution, and drinking water quality concerns. That article was written by Steph Braun.
This is from The National on Monday, 13th November 2023, from the Politics section. Heartless Tory cuts would force sick and disabled back into work. By Steph Braun. Tory plans to force hundreds of thousands of sick and disabled people back into work have been branded heartless by the SNP. Ministers have drawn up nasty proposals which would see people with chronic physical and mental illnesses have to return to work before they're fit and able, or risk having their benefits cut, according to the BBC. The changes would affect hundreds of thousands of people from 2025. It is expected to save £4 billion from the welfare budget over 4 years. The Department for Work and Pensions said reform would be gradual. SNP MP David Lyndon said, "These latest nasty Tory proposals will cut the incomes of chronically ill and disabled people in the middle of a cost of living crisis. This Westminster government, which Scotland didn't vote for, is heartless and they need to go. And the only way to do that for good is with independence. That is the only way Scotland will ever get the governments it votes for, and the only way to create a fair and more equal society." Whilst the Westminster government looks for ways to push people into poverty, the Scottish government is working to put money in people's pockets with policies such as the Scottish Child Payment and by freezing council tax. With the Tories and Labour increasingly on the same page on a whole host of damaging policies, including Brexit and austerity, it's clear that it is only with independence that Scotland can rid itself of damaging Westminster policies and build a fairer, more prosperous country. The proposals follow the announcement in March that the government wants to scrap the controversial work capability assessment, which is used to determine if people can receive additional payments due to a health condition. Eligible claimants currently receive £390 a month on top of their universal credit payment. If the proposals are enacted, people who are in severe pain while awaiting an operation or who have some mental health conditions may not receive the additional payment but would be expected to look for work. The charity Disability Rights UK said this policy is a deliberate attempt to save money by risking disabled people's lives, and that the consequences will be more disabled people will be pushed into poverty. We will see more deaths and greater deterioration in health. Both Chancellor Jeremy Hunt and Work and Pensions Secretary Mel Stride have spoken in recent months of their wish to get more people off benefits. Those who currently receive additional money are placed into two categories, either having limited capacity for work-related activity if they receive universal credit, or in the support group if they receive employment and support allowance. Under the plans, these categories would be ditched. The additional benefit would not be paid, and work coaches in job centres would be the judges of how much effort a person has made to find a job. Those considered not to be trying hard enough could be threatened with having their benefits sanctioned. It is understood the changes would initially affect new claimants, but existing benefit recipients would eventually be brought into the new system. A Department for Work and Pensions spokesperson said the BBC's story was purely speculation. The structural reforms set out in the Health and Disability White Paper, which will improve the experience of the benefits system for disabled people, will be rolled out gradually from 2026, and transitional protection will ensure nobody experiences a financial loss as a result of moving onto the new system, the spokesperson added. That article was by Steph Brown. This is from The National on Monday, 13th November 2023, from the News section. First bus engineers call off strike action after pay deal reached. By Steph Brown. Bus company engineers have called off strike action after securing an excellent pay deal, a union has said, although drivers are still set to walk out. Around 150 engineers who maintain and repair First Glasgow buses had been set to strike on November 16th and 17th in a dispute over pay. Unite the Union said the walkout had now been called out after it secured a new pay deal, which it said equates to a rise worth more than £5,000 extra pounds a year. However, around 1,200 Unite bus drivers involved in a similar pay dispute are still set to walk out for a week later this month. Sharon Graham, Unite General Secretary, said, Unite's engineers at First Bus across Greater Glasgow have secured an excellent new pay deal. We said all along that this is a company that can well afford to make a fair pay offer, and this proved to be the case. We now urge First Bus management to urgently revisit their pay offer to our 1,200 drivers and settle that dispute through negotiations. If they do not, then Unite will fully support our members all the way in their fight for better jobs, pay and conditions. Unite said the engineers backed the new offer, which will see the hourly wage increase by a minimum of 17.6% by April 2024 by 92%. The union said the pay deal will initially increase wages from £15.31 to £17.50 and thereafter to a minimum of £18 per hour in April 2024. The engineers are employed by First Glasgow No. 1 and First Glasgow No. 2, which are part of First Group's PLC's bus operations in Scotland. They are based in various bus depots across Greater Glasgow, including Blantyre, Caledonia, Dumbarton, Overton and Scotstoun. Unite said around 1,200 drivers employed by First Glasgow No. 1 and First Glasgow No. 2 will walk out at 4 a.m. on Friday, November 24th until 3:59 a.m. on Friday, December 1st, unless there is a breakthrough in pay talks. First Bus has been asked for comment. In a statement issued last week about the planned strike by drivers, a First Bus spokesperson said, "We can confirm we've been notified of their intention to hold industrial action from November 24th to December 1st inclusive. This is despite us making an offer which would see a pay rise of over 11%, well above the rate of inflation." In recent years, First Glasgow has heavily invested in electrifying its fleet as well as making significant pay awards. The investment has exceeded any profit made and has ensured we have a far more sustainable business for the future. At First Bus, we look after our people and pay them a fair wage relative to the role they perform in the business. We have invested heavily in improving working conditions and enhanced benefits for our colleagues. We will be looking to continue discussions with union representatives in an attempt to reach a resolution. That article was by Steph Brown. This is from The National on Monday, 13th November 2023, from the News section. Scottish manufacturer Tots Bots collapses with all staff made redundant. By Adam Robertson. A Scottish manufacturer and online retailer of reusable nappies, swimwear nappies and related accessories has collapsed into liquidation with all 47 staff made redundant. Blair Nimmo and Alistair McAlladen of Interpath Advisory were appointed as joint provisional liquidators to Totspots Limited on Thursday last week. The award-winning family-owned business had focused on sustainable and environmentally friendly products and was established more than 20 years ago. Totspots also manufactures and sells a range of reusable period products under its Nora brand. McAlinden said it was extremely disappointing the company was unable to continue trading. Explaining the background to the fall of Totspots into liquidation, Interpath Advisory said, in common with many other online retailers, the company had recently experienced challenging trading conditions, including rising costs and fragile consumer confidence. This led to the company experiencing pressures on cash flow. After working tirelessly to explore funding solutions and reviewing the available strategic options, the directors took the difficult decision to seek the appointment of the provisional liquidators. It added, the business ceased to trade immediately following the appointment of the provisional liquidators and, as such, all of the company's 47 employees were made redundant. McAlinden said, this award-winning family-owned business had blazed a trail for producing sustainable and environmentally friendly baby and period products, so it's hugely disappointing that, despite the very best efforts of the directors, challenging trading conditions have meant that the company is unable to continue to trade. He added, our immediate priority is to provide employees with the help and support they need to make claims from the redundancy payments service. We have engaged with Skills Development Scotland's Partnership Action for Continuing Employment team in order that PACE support can be made available to employees too. We have commenced initial steps to realise the company's assets, which include, amongst other things, stock, manufacturing equipment and intellectual property, including the brand and domain names. We would therefore ask any interested parties to contact us as soon as possible. That article was by Adam Robertson.
From The National, Monday the 13th of November, from the comment section, exclusive comment, we must look at a different future for Scotland inside the EU. And this is a comment piece by First Minister Hamza Yousaf. Before Brexit, the UK economy was faltering badly. It was becoming characterised by low productivity and high inequality. The decision to leave the European Union, against Scotland's clear will, seemed to have cemented those damaging trends. The Brexit hit to the economy has made it much harder to cope with the Westminster cost of living crisis, and Brexit itself has been a major contributor to higher food prices. With Labour now just as pro-Brexit as the Tories, things are not going to get any better. Indeed, the UK's official independent fiscal watchdog forecasts that Brexit will reduce GDP by 4% in the long term, compared with EU membership. That might not sound much, but it means a completely unnecessary hit to the living standards and will wipe billions of pounds from the UK and Scottish economies, making it more difficult to fund public services like the NHS. So, when, as seems likely, Keir Starmer enters Downing Street after the next election, he will be inflicting on Scotland, from day one, the same old Brexit economic damage as the Tories. Neither Labour nor the Tories want to talk about this. Like a cosy Westminster gentleman's agreement, they're engaged in a campaign of deafening silence over the damage they both know is being done to the Scottish and UK economies. The SNP will always stand up for Scotland rather than sit back and watch while Westminster causes yet more harm. So, this week, the Scottish Government is going to challenge that cosy consensus. We've already been stepping up the pace on the Building a New Scotland series, which updates the independence prospectus from 2014, with proposals on a new constitution, citizenship and migration, and an independent Scotland. And on Friday, we'll set out an alternative future for Scotland, a future where we're back in the EU, but crucially, for the very first time, as a state in our own right. I understand, of course, that there is much to weigh up and work through. Those of us who believe in independence should never stop listening to what people are saying. We need to address concerns, not dismiss them. But let's also be clear. The UK economic model has failed Scotland. When we look at the EU, independent member states that are like Scotland are both wealthier and, crucially, fairer than the UK. It's worth considering the case of Ireland in particular because their success highlights the powerful combination of independence and EU membership. When Ireland joined the EU, it had a heavy trade reliance on the UK and was considerably poorer. Today, it has diversified its trades and become richer. If EU states such as Ireland, Denmark and Sweden can be fairer and wealthier than the UK, then, with our unique industries, vast resources and world-renowned talents, why not Scotland? Rather than accept our fate as part of a Brexit-based stagnating UK economy, it has never been more important to bring evidence-based optimism and hope to the essential debate on Scotland's future. And that was an exclusive comment piece by Hamza Yousaf. From The National, Monday the 13th of November, from the comment section. Suella Braverman's message got to the thugs it was meant for. A column by Kirsty Strickland. If the demonstrable failings of our Home Secretary didn't have such grave consequences, you would have expected her to be the subject of her own resignation lettuce livestream by now. At the weekend, we saw what happens when cynical party politics is weaponised by, and for, those with bad intentions. Boris Johnson embodied all the qualities and characteristics of somebody uniquely unsuited to lead a country through a pandemic. In a similar way, Suella Braverman is the worst Home Secretary at the worst possible time. Tensions were already high ahead of the pro-Palestine marches at the weekend. Braverman exploited those tensions with her incendiary op-ed for The Times. She described the marchers calling for a ceasefire as a mob, and the demonstration itself was a hate march. The marches, she said, would be an affront to the British public and called on the Metropolitan Police to use anti-protest powers to ban the London protest, despite the fact that organisers had already pledged to stay away from the cenotaph and delay the start of the march until after the 11 a.m. Armistice Day commemorations took place. Her accusation that the police were guilty of double standards in their treatment of protesters from the left and right was heard loud and clear by the thugs that the message was intended for. Many of them descended on London on Saturday, led by hate-filled rabble-rouser Tommy Robinson. These brave lads marched in defence of a statue, but not before sinking a few pints and throwing a few punches, to demonstrate just how deeply patriotic they are. As their thuggery was broadcast live for all to see, one reporter described the scenes as more reminiscent of a football match than a day of solemn commemoration. These shameful scenes were in stark contrast to the moments of quiet, unshowy remembrance that took place elsewhere. There is no doubt Braverman's brazen attempt to interfere in the operational workings of the police was designed to inflame tensions ahead of the Remembrance weekend. Rishi Sunak looked weak when he said he had full confidence in her after it was revealed that her piece in The Times hadn't been given the go-ahead by Number 10. She challenged him and he bottled it. And if he looked weak at that moment, then he looks thoroughly pathetic now. We all saw the consequences of the Home Secretary's words play out on national television. She undermined the authority of police officers and then remained silent as they came under attack by a band of far-right louts. No Prime Minister who enjoyed the full confidence of his party would allow such antics to go unchallenged. For as long as she remains in the role, Braverman will serve as a walking reminder of the weakness of Sunak's position. In seeking to avoid conflict with the loony right of his party, he is allowing the UK to be put in the incredibly risky position of having a freelancing Home Secretary. Just like the thugs who descended on Whitehall, Braverman will have been emboldened by the weekend's events. In anticipation of her party losing power at the next election, she is conducting a leadership bid from the comfy vantage point of a ministerial office. If the Prime Minister thinks he can control Braverman's rebellious tendencies with behind-the-scenes pleas for restraint, he's in for a shock. A minister who is unsackable is also by definition uncontrollable. It seems unconscionable that Sunak deemed the disgruntled mutterings and threats from his hard-right backbenchers more of a risk than keeping an unscrupulous Home Secretary in post who is intent on his downfall. Of course, it is possible that the Prime Minister wanted to wait until Remembrance Weekend was over before taking action. Perhaps his long overdue hunt for a backbone will prove fruitful. He might yet come to the belated realisation that the hard right of his party cannot be soothed and placated, so there is no point in even trying. But it would be too little too late. The damage has already been done, and few will forget those disgraceful Armistice Day scenes any time soon. It is clear time is running out for the Conservative Party. Rather than use the little they have left before a general election to fight the wrongs of their time in government, it seems to be a mission to do as much damage as possible before it is turfed out of office. And it should worry us enormously that people like Braverman, who holds the powers of one of the great offices of state, are in a prime position to inflict maximum harm upon our democratic norms and institutions in the months ahead. And that was a comment piece by columnist Kirsty Strickland.
From The National, on Tuesday, the 14th of October, 2023. From the Politics section. BBC Radio 4. SNP withdrew ceasefire motion, claims Lisa Nandy. This article was written by Laura Pollock. A senior Labour MP has come under attack for claiming that SNP have withdrawn their amendment to the King's Speech in the House of Commons, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza live on radio. Lisa Nandy, Labour's Shadow Secretary for International Development, was invited on to BBC Radio 4's PM programme to speak to her party's position ahead of a potential ceasefire vote in the Commons on Wednesday. The SNP has tabled an amendment that calls on the government to join with the international community to urgently pressing all parties to agree to an immediate ceasefire. It remains unclear whether it will be selected for a vote by Commons Speaker Sir Lindsay Hoyle. However, the Shadow Secretary stated the motion had been withdrawn. When asked by presenter Evan Davis if she could set out Labour's front bench position in the case of a vote, Nandy said, "Well, we don't yet know what the SNP is proposing to do. They did have an original motion that they tabled, which has been withdrawn, and I understand they are proposing to potentially table another." Broadcaster Leslie Riddick posted on Twitter what Nandy had said, writing, "Lisa Nandy on PM programme says SNP has withdrawn its ceasefire motion. Is that right? At Stephen Flynn SNP." SNP Westminster leader Stephen Flynn replied denying the claim, writing, "Just listen to at Lindsay Nandy state on Radio 4 that the SNP have withdrawn our ceasefire amendment. This is categorically not true. As a senior Labour figure, I'm hoping that this is simply the result of a poor briefing from an aide rather than a willful attempt to mislead." SNP Chief Whip Owen Thompson MP also replied to Riddick stating, "No, this is not true. We have not withdrawn our amendment." Riddick replied, "Then call BBC and correct misinformation." The BBC have been approached for comment. The Labour MP went on to confirm Labour is to lodge an amendment but denied this calling for a ceasefire. Nandy said, "It's right that we MPs, particularly Labour MPs, the opportunity to vote for the Labour position as the violence and bombing in Gaza continues to escalate. And that is why we will be tabling an amendment later today to the King's Speech in order to set out our position." She said the Labour amendment would call for aid to go into Gaza to release the hostages and longer humanitarian pauses. When asked what the instruction would be from Labour leadership when it came to a potential vote on an SNP amendment calling for a ceasefire, she said, What the SNP do is a matter for them. We'll be expecting Labour MPs to vote for the Labour position. We don't know yet the SNP's position or whether it's going to be selected. Nandi was interrupted with the hypothetical position of an SNP motion, which is not hypothetical as it has been withdrawn, stating, let's suppose it's a ceasefire. Will they, Labour MPs, be sacked if they vote for the ceasefire? Nandi replied, well, whipping decisions are obviously a matter for the chief whip, and I don't think he or my colleagues will take kindly to me making them live on the radio. But what I would say is that we've been very clear that whilst we want all to see an end to the violence as quickly as possible, we are also clear, having spent time in the region the last couple of weeks and worked very closely with partners across the board, that the only viable prospect, as the UN humanitarian coordinator has said, is to extend humanitarian pauses, to get aid in, to get hostages out. Nandi was then challenged with the fact that UN has called for a ceasefire in the name of humanity. The interview came as First Minister Humza Yousaf shared a report by The Telegraph reporting that Keir Starmer is preparing to sack Labour shadow ministers who vote in favour of backing a ceasefire in the Israel-Gaza conflict. It is understood by the publication that prominent figures close to the Labour leader believe more than 10 Labour front benches could end up supporting the SNP amendment if it is selected for a vote on Wednesday. Yousaf wrote on Twitter, Keir Starmer is reportedly threatening to sack any Labour frontbench MP who votes for a ceasefire tomorrow. What a complete lack of moral leadership. The SNP will force a vote on a ceasefire. This is a plea for every MP to do the right thing and vote with their conscience. And that article was written by Laura Pollock. From The National, on Tuesday, the 14th of November, 2023. From the Politics section. SNP hit out at absurdity of David Cameron as Foreign Secretary. This article was written by Hamish Morrison. The UK government have been criticised for the absurdity of not being able to scrutinise the Foreign Secretary in the Commons Chamber. Former Prime Minister David Cameron took on the role on Monday and was ennobled so he would be answerable to Parliament. But critics have pointed out this means he will dodge questioning in the Commons, answering instead to unelected peers in the House of Commons. Foreign Office Minister Andrew Mitchell announced on Tuesday, before an update on the war between Israel and Hamas, that he would act as Cameron's deputy in the Commons. Both Labour and the SNP criticised the appointment, though Mitchell said the Foreign Secretary would appear before select committees regularly. SNP Foreign Affairs spokesperson Brenda O'Hara said, "Already we see the absurdity of having a Foreign Secretary who is unable to come to speak in this chamber to elected members at a time of grave international crisis." He went on to reiterate the SNP's calls for a ceasefire, adding, "There can only be a political solution to this crisis, and one has to be found before the entire region is engulfed. That's why a ceasefire is essential." O'Hara also called on Scotland's two Labour MPs, Ian Murray and Michael Shanks, to back the SNP's motion calling for a ceasefire, which is expected to get a vote on Wednesday. Mitchell replied, "He's known our position on the ceasefire. It's a position shared by the opposition front bench." Speaking earlier, Mitchell said, "The Foreign Secretary, the business managers and I all believe it is essential this House properly scrutinises the work of the Foreign Office, especially as we face such a daunting set of challenges across the world. As Minister of State, I will follow the precedent followed by successive governments of different parties, from Lord Carrington to Lord Home to more recent times when Lord Maddison has served in Cabinet from the House of Lords. I will deputise for the Foreign Secretary in this House, making regular statements like today's and respecting the privacy of this House in the normal way. And of course, the Foreign Secretary will appear before the House of Lords and relevant committees regularly. Updating on the current situation in Gaza, the minister said the UK government was keeping pressure on Israel to increase the access of humanitarian aid into the Strip. Shadow Foreign Secretary David Lammy said, short humanitarian pauses, which have so far lasted around 4 hours, are not long enough. To heckles of ceasefire from the SNP MPs, Lammy said, Gaza is a humanitarian catastrophe. More than 1.5 million people have been displaced. There are desperate shortages of basic essentials. Does the minister agree that the short pauses in the north are clearly not enough? Gazans need aid now. They need medicines now. They need water now. They need food now. They need fuel now. A full, comprehensive and immediate humanitarian pause in fighting across the whole of Gaza now to alleviate Palestinian suffering and for Hamas terrorists to release the hostages. Mitchell said, all deaths of civilians are to be profoundly regretted. And that article was written by Hamish Morrison.
The National, Politics, on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Activists disrupt energy conference over oil field approval. An article written by Laura Pollock. A group of climate activists have disrupted an energy conference in London in protest against the government's approval of drilling the Rosebank oil field. Demonstrators from Fossil Free London interrupted the Gas, LNG and the Future of Energy conference at the Hilton Hotel in Tower Bridge on Tuesday. Furious speeches and chants of Stop Rosebank were made before the activists were dragged out by security, the climate campaign group said. The conference included discussions on the uncertainty currently existing in the gas industry and the role of gas in supporting the energy transition. Rosebank, located west of Shetland, is thought to be one of the largest untapped oil fields in Scottish waters. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced plans for new drilling at Rosebank and other North Sea oil fields in August, which were then granted consent by the North Sea Transition Authority the following month. A commitment to the future licensing of new oil and gas fields was then reiterated in the King's Speech on November the 7th. Greta Thunberg was amongst those at another protest against the decision outside the Lord Mayor's banquet in Guildhall, where Mr Sunak gave a speech on foreign policy on Monday. Joanna Warrington, spokesperson for Fossil Free London, said, Rosebank would be an unremitting disaster for the climate and for energy security. It would blow our climate targets to pieces while costing us billions in public money. The only winners from Rosebank are the bosses of oil giant Equinor, who'll be rubbing their hands with glee. Rishi Sunak and his kamikaze government are blatantly putting the interest of their billionaire oil mates above those of ordinary people. Public services are crumbling, families are facing grinding poverty, but the government's priority is to splash cash on a publicly funded carbon bomb. Rosebank could produce 69,000 barrels of oil per day, about 8% of the UK's projected daily output between 2026 and 2030, and could also produce 44 million cubic feet of gas every day, according to its owners Ithaca Energy and Equinor. Critics, including Scottish First Minister Hamza Yousaf, have said the development will damage net zero ambitions. An article written by Laura Pollock. The National, Politics, on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Experts undermine Tory boasts as inflation drops below 5%. An article written by Xander Eliads. The Tories have rushed to claim victory after new data showed inflation has dropped to below 5%, despite experts saying that UK government action has had little to do with it. It comes as the latest data from the Office for National Statistics showed that consumer price index inflation was 4.6% in October, down from 6.7% in September. In January, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak made halving inflation the first of his five pledges, At the time, the Consumer Prices Index inflation rate stood at 10.7%. October's figure marks the lowest level since October 2021, when the rate stood at 4.2%. Mr. Sunak and his top allies, including Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, have trumpeted the numbers as evidence of their success. Mr. Hunt wrote, "Beating back inflation has been this government's number one priority. It's now half what it was, down from 10.7% to 4.6%. That's thanks to deliberate action that we've taken, being disciplined on spending, helping people into work, and resisting calls for additional borrowing." And Mr. Sunak claimed his hard decisions and fiscal discipline has had an impact. But experts have said that claims the fall in inflation is due to UK government action are dubious. Instead, rising interest rates and falling global energy prices have been singled out as key reasons for the fall. Suren Tiru, economics director of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales, said, "This dramatic drop suggests that the UK has turned the corner in its battle against soaring inflation, particularly given the fall in core inflation, which indicates that underlying price pressures are also easing. While the Prime Minister has achieved his target to halve inflation this year, this owes more to the downward pressure on prices from falling energy costs and rising interest rates than any government action." Paula Benyirano-Cabo, an associate economist with the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, said the fall was driven by a base effect, which is the large energy price increases that occurred in October 2022, dropping out of the Consumer Price Index inflation basket this October. She went on, "It's important to stress that control of inflation is the job of the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England, and not the government. It's largely its actions, raising interest rates, that have enabled inflation to fall in this time, alongside decreasing energy prices. It would therefore be helpful to move the narrative away from this halving objective and back towards the 2% target." Nicholas Hyatt, an investment analyst at Brokers Wealth Club, said, "At the headline level at least, these numbers are cause for celebration. A substantial fall in inflation should help ease the cost of living crisis, while a pause in interest rate rises will be a huge relief to mortgage holders. Downing Street will be particularly pleased to wave goodbye to the UK's status as the inflation nation, since it means that the Prime Minister's pledge to cut inflation in half is achieved a month ahead of schedule. Although whether the government is entitled to celebrate a fall in global energy prices over which it has no control is rather dubious." Labour's Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said the fall in inflation rates would be a relief for many, but went on, "Now is not the time for Conservative ministers to be popping champagne corks and patting themselves on the back. After 13 years of economic failure under the Conservatives, working people are worse off with higher mortgage bills, prices still rising in the shops, and inflation twice as high as the Bank of England's target." The Office for National Statistics chief economist Grant Fitzner said, "Inflation fell substantially, as last year's steep rise in energy costs has been followed by a small reduction in the energy price cap this year. Food prices were little changed on the month after rising this time last year, while hotel prices fell, both helping to push inflation to its lowest rate for 2 years. The cost of goods leaving factories rose on the month. However, the annual growth was slightly negative, led by petroleum and basic metal products." An article written by Xander Eliads. The National News on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Motorhome tax could cost more than it raises. An article written by Xander Eliads. Charging a visitor levy on wild campers and holidaymakers in motorhomes who do not stay on regulated sites would be too onerous, council leaders have warned. Gail McGregor, economy spokesperson for the local government body COSLA, stressed that seeking to apply any charges to these groups would be so difficult that it may cost more than it would raise. With the Scottish Government bringing forward legislation which would allow councils to introduce a visitor levy on overnight stays, Councils such as Highland have called for tourists in motorhomes and campervans to come under its remit. Bill Lobban, the convener of Highland Council, has previously told MSPs scrutinising the plans that there needs to be some way of including campervans in the process. But giving evidence to MSPs on the local government committee, Ms McGregor said the new charge has to be manageable by local authorities. She said, "Whether we're looking at a flat rate or a percentage rate, if it's accommodation-based rather than visitor number-based, then it's much easier to manage and collect. We have looked at wild campers and motorhomes, but unless they're actually staying in dedicated sites, it would be very, very difficult for us and probably quite onerous and could get to the point where what we're bringing in through the levy is being lost in the collection of that." As it stands, the Visitor Levy Scotland Bill, which has been brought forward by the Scottish Government, would allow councils to charge a fee on overnight visitor stays, with the cash raised then being used in a way that would benefit tourists. It's proposed the fee would be a percentage of visitors' accommodation costs and would apply to those staying in hotels, hostels, bed and breakfasts, self-catering accommodation, campsites and caravan parks. But wild campers and those in motorhomes or campervans who pitch elsewhere would not be covered. The Scottish Government is also seeking to give councils the power to charge a levy on visiting cruise ships. While this could be included in the Visitor Levy Bill, Public Finance Minister Tom Arthur stressed the government did not want to see the introduction of the legislation delayed. He told the committee, "We may seek to amend the bill to include the cruise ship levy, but that will very much depend on whether policy development work and a consultation have been completed. We don't want to delay this bill and the power it will give to local authorities." He insisted a visitor levy could be a force for good, saying councils would be able to use funds raised to invest in their local economy, bring benefits to visitors and residents alike. While some in the tourism sector have claimed the new charge risks the competitiveness of the industry, Mr. Arthur stressed that Scotland was already a world-class tourist destination. He added that the bill would give councils a discretionary power to raise additional revenue to invest in the visitor economy and could generate valuable extra investment to enhance and to support and to develop the world-class offering Scotland already gives. An article written by Xander Elliott. The National News on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Questions after key Scottish rail closure sparks major disruption. An article written by Xander Elliott. Rail bosses are facing questions after troubling frequent closures of key Scottish railway lines. MSP Kevin Stewart, a former Transport Minister, wrote to ScotRail after Tuesday saw the Aberdeen to Dundee rail line shut down due to a defect. Trains faced major disruption while engineers probed the reported fault near to the site of the 2020 Stonehaven crash, which killed three people. After the track reopened at around 3:20 p.m, Network Rail, the UK government-owned body which manages the rail lines, said the trains from Aberdeen to Dundee were limited to 20 miles an hour. This speed restriction was lifted slightly before 5 p.m. Mr. Stewart wrote to Network Rail on social media, "Safety is paramount, but the closing of this line is happening far too often. What are you doing to ensure that the line can be opened as soon as possible? What long-term action are you taking to ensure fewer closures in the future?" The SNP MSP for Aberdeen Central also penned a letter to Alex Hines, the managing director of ScotRail, raising similar questions. Mr. Stewart's letter said, "I'm writing to you regarding today's closure of the Aberdeen to Dundee line. I'm extremely concerned to hear that this line has closed yet again due to a potential track defect. Safety is, of course, the most important thing here. However, I find it quite troubling just how frequently this line has to close due to safety concerns. I would be grateful if you could confirm what you're doing to ensure the line reopens as soon as possible. Further, I'd be grateful if you could confirm what long-term action you are taking to ensure closures are limited in the future." ScotRail said that the issue was for Network Rail to answer. Network Rail has been asked for comment. An article written by Xander Elliott. The National, Politics, on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Scottish Tories threaten a vote of no confidence in Michael Matheson. An article written by Abby Garton-Crosby. The Scottish Tories have threatened to table a motion of no confidence in Michael Matheson if he does not hand over the iPad on which he ran up almost £11,000 in roaming charges for investigation. The Health Secretary insisted on Monday that parliamentary authorities had looked at the data usage on the device, but Holyrood officials said that the iPad did not provide a breakdown of data over a specific time frame. Mr. Matheson racked up the £10,935.74 bill during a visit to Morocco over Christmas last year after he had failed to change over a SIM card in the device. He had initially offered to pay £3,000 of the cost, with the Scottish Parliament covering the rest of the bill, but later said he would pay the full amount himself. And now the Scottish Tory leader Douglas Ross has claimed that for Mr. Matheson's claims that the costs were incurred because of parliamentary and constituency business to be verified, he must hand over the device to Holyrood's IT experts. The SNP said the move was an attempt to keep the story going and insisted Mr. Matheson had done the right thing. Mr. Ross issued an ultimatum to the Health Secretary on Tuesday that unless he hands over the iPad to be examined and makes a statement to MSPs in Holyrood, then the Scottish Tories will move to force a vote of no confidence. "We need to get to the bottom of this saga once and for all, so the Scottish Conservatives are issuing the Health Secretary with an ultimatum. Hand over the iPad for the browsing history to be checked and deliver a personal statement in Parliament explaining the full circumstances, or we'll table a motion of no confidence," Mr. Ross said in a statement. On Monday, Mr. Matheson accused the Tories of political mischief over the issue with the iPad and insisted it had already been investigated by parliamentary authorities. Scottish Parliament authorities, however, said they were primarily looking at the volume of mobile data consumed, as they had been assured the device was being used for parliamentary purposes. Mr. Ross said this meant Mr. Matheson still had serious questions to answer over the matter and that suspicions will linger until evidence of a breakdown of the costs is provided. "This scandal has dragged on for several days now and Michael Matheson is looking shiftier with each one that passes," the Scottish Tory leader said. "He still has serious questions to answer and suspicions will linger for as long as he fails to prove his claim that the enormous tab he expected taxpayers to foot was the product solely of parliamentary work." We previously reported how Mr. Matheson insisted authorities had already investigated. "They investigated the issue back in January," he said. "They had all the data and everything from it. They had access to all of the data on the iPad when they looked at it back in January." An SNP spokesperson said, "This is simply an attempt to keep a story going, days after Mr. Matheson has done the right thing and agreed to foot the bill personally. While we are focused on crucial issues such as steering our health service through the winter, the Tories only ever want to talk about process issues." An article written by Abby Garton-Crosby. The National, News, on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Shoppers kept at home by a Drukit October. An article written by Gregor Young. Sales of Wellington boots and cold and flu remedies fared well last month, but sales overall took a real terms dip in Scotland as the busy Christmas shopping period got off to a miserable start, according to monthly figures. The Drukit weather saw sales of such items do well, director of the Scottish Retail Consortium David Lonsdale said, as the body's latest monthly retail figures for October were released. The biggest quarter in the retail calendar year got off to a miserable start in Scotland due to storms, floods and the ongoing cost of living crisis. The consortium's monthly retail sales monitor showed a 2.3% year-on-year decline in retail sales in October, once adjusted for inflation, which represented the fourth consecutive month of real terms decline. Growth in grocery sales decreased, but lower-priced indulgences such as cosmetics and fragrances fared well, as did sales of Wellington boots and cold medicines. Total sales last month increased by 2.9% compared with October last year, when they had grown by 6.3%. Adjusted for inflation, the year-on-year decline was 2.3%, the consortium said. Food sales increased by 7.5% versus October last year, when they had increased by 10.9%. But adjusted for the estimated effect of online sales, total non-food sales decreased by 1.9% in October compared to the same period last year. October was below the three-month average growth of 8.5% and the 12-month average growth of 12.1%. The three-month average was below the UK level of 7.9%. Mr. Lonsdale said, "Severe storms and repeated deluges and disruptions, combined with lingering cost of living concerns, to put a real dampener on Scottish retail sales last month. It was a miserable start to retail's golden quarter. The significant weakening was the poorest monthly performance since July, and a fourth consecutive month of real terms decline in the value of retail sales. The downturn was seen across all categories, but was particularly pronounced in non-food, which saw its first decline since May. The growth in grocery sales continued to reduce, mirroring the fall in food price inflation. Lower-priced indulgences such as cosmetics and fragrances fared well, as did sales of Wellington boots and cold and flu remedies, perhaps unsurprisingly, given the Drukhet conditions. Formal wear was a bright spot as people returned to corporate events and prepared for the looming party season, but clothing overall suffered, as did sales of larger ticket items, including white goods, electricals and furniture. Hopefully, the downturn in sales is only temporary. That said, it may continue for a little while yet, as indications are that households are delaying Christmas-related spending in the hope of grabbing a bargain during Black Friday discounting. It's critical that the Chancellor and Finance Secretary, in their upcoming budgets, seek to support consumer confidence while helping retailers to keep down prices at the tills. The marked deceleration in shop price inflation should assist, as should the temporary discounts to peak rail fares and mooted council tax freeze. Mr. Lonsdale added, "However, we need to see ministers rule out a hike in the business rate, which would add significantly to shopkeepers' outgoings and put upward pressure on prices for consumers." An article written by Gregor Young. The National News on Wednesday, the 15th of November. Wind turbine blade delivery in the Scottish Borders targeted by vandals. An article written by Steph Braun. A vehicle delivering wind turbine blades to a development in the Scottish Borders has been vandalised. Developers Energy Contour said a lifter vehicle involved in transportation to the Pines Burn project near Hoyk, which consists of 11 turbines, had been damaged. A delivery planned for Tuesday has now been called off while repairs are carried out. The company said it hoped it would be able to resume on Friday once the lifter was fixed. The blade delivery was paused in a lay-by near Selkirk last week due to slower-than-expected travel times and reduced winter daylight hours. An Energy Contour spokesperson said, "We apologise for the inconvenience caused. This cancellation was due to vandalism to the blade lifter. Repairs are ongoing." The turbines are being delivered to the site close to Bonchester Bridge in sections, with a police escort needed for the convoys due to their size. The firm has faced criticism for the disruption caused by the slow-moving convoys carrying the 65-metre blades, but has pledged to keep traffic impact to an absolute minimum. Deliveries were halted last month for a review following complaints that they had paralysed Hoyk town centre. The scheme was originally refused by the council due to its unacceptable impacts on the nearby Pencraised Pen Fort, but was granted on appeal to the Scottish Government. An article written by Steph Braun.
From the National, Thursday the 16th of November, from the Politics section. The title is Michael Matheson, Teens Streaming Football Matches Led to iPad Bill, by Abby Garton Crosby. Health Secretary Michael Matheson told MSPs that his teenagers were behind the £11,000 iPad bill after watching a number of football matches. An emotional Matheson told the chamber that he found out last Thursday that his children had been using the parliamentary iPad without his knowledge. He insisted that the truth only emerged about the data usage when the story hit the headlines last week, but that the responsibility for the iPad was his alone. Speaking to journalists after his statement, the Health Secretary insisted that he would not resign and that he had not watched the football matches himself. Matheson said he should have pressed harder to discover the truth about the charges when they emerged and made the immediate decision to fully reimburse Parliament. He said he did not knowingly run up the roaming charges bill, adding quite the reverse. Matheson told the Holyrood Chamber that last Thursday evening he was told by his wife that other members of her family had made use of the iPad's data. This was the first I knew that the data had been used by anyone else, he said. I had previously checked this, but the truth only emerged after this story was in the news. Matheson admitted that he made no reference to his knowledge that his children had used the iPad in a statement he issued last Friday. As a parent, I wanted to protect them from being part of the political and media scrutiny associated with this, something I believe any parent would want to do. I am a father first and foremost. That was a mistake and I am sorry. Presiding officer, the simple truth is they watched football matches. I can see now that it just isn't possible to explain the data usage without explaining their role. Matheson insisted that as EE had refused to explain how the data was incurred to parliamentary authorities, he had been unable to explain how the charges occurred. He revealed that he told the First Minister about his children's involvement on Tuesday, understood to be after the weekly cabinet meeting, and provided a full account of the matter to Humza Yousaf on Wednesday evening. Presiding officer, disclosing this information about our family has been extremely difficult, Matheson said. Mistakes have been made by me, by my family, and mistakes have been made in the way I have handled this. I should have sorted the SIM card, and I should have investigated what happened more thoroughly. I accept that, take full responsibility, and apologise unreservedly. Matheson added that he had referred himself to the Scottish Parliamentary Corporate Body to be investigated under the MSP Code of Conduct. MSPs unanimously agreed to suspend a parliamentary standing order to allow Matheson to be questioned on his statement, as it was being given in a personal capacity rather than on behalf of the government. Scottish Tory leader Douglas Ross said that while he recognised the difficulty the incident had caused, questions remain over Matheson's previous assurances that the device was only used for parliamentary purposes. It has now transpired that his son was watching football. Why did he claim he was doing parliamentary work? Ross said. How he could 100% say to Parliament, when claiming £11,000 of taxpayers' money, that he was doing parliamentary work, the two stories do not align. It does seem that Parliament was misled to make that claim. Matheson replied that when he was made aware of the high cost of the charges, the Holyrood IT department did contact EE to find out more details about how they had occurred. He said, Unfortunately, the network provider was unable to provide that information to the Parliament, and therefore we were unable to identify how the costs of the roaming charges associated with my iPad had been accrued. Matheson added that he did give the iPad to the IT department to see if there was an issue with it. He added, "This has been a challenging and emotional time for my family. I chose not to provide details of that in my statement on Friday because it would implicate my children in this issue." The Tories are reportedly still looking to call a vote of no confidence in Matheson. Scottish Labour Deputy Leader Jackie Bailey said that while anyone with a teenager would understand what has happened, what the public would not understand is the cover-up, and said Matheson had created a mess of his own making. She accused the Health Secretary of being negligent, and if he understood that some may have lost confidence in his ability to do his job. Matheson replied that he accepted the incident was wholly his responsibility, and that his understanding was during the trip, the iPad had only been used for parliamentary purposes. "Clearly, things have changed as a result of the information I now have," he said. Speaking to journalists after the statement, he insisted he didn't watch the football and wasn't aware it was being watched either. Asked if he would resign, Matheson said, "No, I don't intend to. As I said in my statement, I intend to continue the work as MSP for Falkirk West and continue to take on the considerable responsibilities as Health Secretary." This was an article called "Michael Matheson, Teens Streaming Football Matches Led to iPad Bill" by Abby Garton Crosby.
This is from The National on Thursday, 16th November, 2023. From the Culture section. Three arrested after Stone of Destiny targeted by protesters. By Xander Elliards. Three people have been arrested after the Stone of Destiny was targeted by protesters. The stone, which has currently been kept at Edinburgh Castle, was said to be the focus of a demonstration from the campaign group This Is Rigged. The group claimed that Edinburgh Castle had been temporarily shut down after their protest. Police said three people had been arrested in connection with damage caused. This Is Rigged took responsibility for the protest, claiming to have smashed the glass with pink hammers and spray-painted the words "Is Tríosa Truach na Deachanna," the Gaelic slogan of the Highland Land League, which translates to "The people are mightier than a lord," onto the glass alongside the group's logo. This Is Rigged said it demanded that supermarkets reduce the prices of baby products to March 2021 prices, and that the Scottish Government fully fund a community food hub per 500 households. In a statement released on social media, the group said, "Food is a human right. Hunger is a political choice. The times we live in are defined by crisis, by instability, by greed. We are already facing a crisis in every basic human need, housing, energy and food, leaving us massively unprepared and under-resourced for the impacts of climate breakdown. We are at a crucial moment in our history. We refuse to be at the mercy of modern-day lairds who hoard our resources and profit all our suffering and the impotent politicians who do nothing to stop this." A Police Scotland spokesperson said, "Around 10:45 a.m, we were called to a report of a small protest within Edinburgh Castle. Officers attended and two women aged 20 and 24 years and a 20-year-old man were arrested in connection with damage caused. Inquiries are ongoing." Also known as the Stone of Scone, the Stone of Destiny is a 125-kilogram slab of pinkish sandstone. It carries with it an enormous amount of symbolism, history and legend. Measuring just 67 centimetres in length, 24 centimetres in width and almost 27 centimetres in height, it has played an outsized role in centuries of royal tradition. Removed by King Edward I of England in 1296, it was brought back to Scotland by a gang of four Scottish nationalists in a daring Christmas Day raid in 1950, returned to Westminster Abbey months later, and then in 1996 sent back north of the border to Edinburgh. It was used in the coronation of King Charles III and is due to be kept in a new museum in Perth. Historic Environment Scotland, which manages Edinburgh Castle, has been approached for comment. That article was by Xander Elias.
That concludes this week's edition of the Nashville Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Hume Review and tell your friends about our service.